Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I'm Lou Epstein, and this is my lovely wife, Francine.
Hi.
Without whom I would not even be here this evening. She is my best friend. She is my dearest partner. She is my most valuable critic in my life. And in being able to listen to her and listen with her to how much she loves me, I have been able to grow to such an extent in my life that I have been able now to just be able to accept criticism like I never thought that I could accept in my life. And I suggest it to all of you who have ever wanted to be in having a relationship that works, it is the secret way through is to listen that you are loved, to trust that you are loved. And in that mode of listening and trusting that you are loved, when your dearest friends and parents and loved ones speak to you, no matter what they say, you'll be able to be there in a way that you will not be distracted by what they say, or not be affected by what they say, or not even react to what they say. You will be in the presence of their love for you, and that they are just the way that they are, just the way that they will always be. I want to thank you for being here, because your presence to us denotes your commitment to having relationships work in the world. The most important thing for us is that relationships work in the world. We are spiritual people. We are people who have been traveling a path, a holy path. We have meditated, we have looked, we have asked questions, and we know out of our reverie and out of our ecstasy and out of our religious experiences that we are an experience of something more than this human being. In a moment of reverie, this human being vanishes, and we are in a state of mind and a state of such ecstasy where there is a silence, a supreme holy silence, the silence of being home, the silence of coming home, the silence of being with yourself. And as human beings, you and I live in a world that is so reactivating. We live here at effect. We want ourselves to be different. We want the people in our lives to be different. We want the person who serves us to be different. We want the people around us to be different. We want the situations to be different. And yet here we are as spiritual people, so cognizant, so present, so conscious to the need for us to be here now, to be here now, to be here now. When we are here now with nothing else going on, we are in a state of reverie, a state of ecstasy, a state of tapestry in colors and sounds like we have never heard before. The silence is one of being home, of coming home, of safety, of godliness, just the presence of the greatness of who you are. Not our incessant mind constantly chattering away and chattering away and chattering away. And it is in my experience of being with Francine that I can speak to the world now, because I know it has come out of my experience, out of my direct experience, so I can share this with everybody because I know it's true. That is in Francine's love for me, her forgiveness of me every day, her willingness to speak the way she feels every day, not holding anything back from me any day. It is in that love for me, that genuine, encompassing, unconditional love that has found me, and I have found myself in the experience of letting myself be loved, and now I live with Francine, trusting that I am loved. I get reactivated. I'm a human being. Just like you. I don't like to be interrupted, especially when I'm doing nothing. I'm a man, and I have a background. I always stand accused about if Francine asks me, where's the paper? My first question is, I had nothing to do with that. What is she asking me for? But whatever it is, we stand accused as men. We've been at ourselves for so many years. Any question that comes up for us, we take everything personally. So I want to thank Francine for forgiving me and loving me every day. Thank you so much, darling.
You're very welcome.
Without you, I just couldn't be here, couldn't be alive the way that I am. You know, I thank you, honey.
You're welcome, sweetheart.
Thank you. I love you. Thank you. You want to say something?
Well, I mean, the truth is I could actually say the same thing that Lewis just said.
Go ahead, say it.
In looking out over our relationship, we will be married 20 years in 2 weeks.
How wonderful when she says that. Now I remember.
We'll be celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary. And who I am today is not the same person I was when Lou and I met 22 years ago. And it is truly in Lou's love for me that I have been safe. I have been safe enough to be able to become myself.
Thank you.
And that may sound strange, but I think that what I would have to say is that before that, I was trying to be who I thought people wanted me to be and who I thought I needed to be in order to be liked. And it was in the safety of Lou's love for me that I was able to discover that who I was sufficient. Matter of fact, it was more than sufficient. It could even be magnificent. And that there was nothing I had to do and nothing that I had to become and nothing that I had to work towards. I could actually relax into being myself. So it is in the safety that of the love that we can provide for each other. But the crime is that many of us love each other. And we
know that we are loved.
And are still not safe with each other. So love is not, in and of itself, what creates safety. You know, and as far as we're concerned, that concerns us because, you know, we fall in love in life and we want to get married and live happily ever after as it's meant to be, and it isn't an easy thing. And it's been proven certainly over the last 30 or 40 years that it's not something that people are finding very easy to do. And as far as we can tell, one of the biggest missing ingredients in how to relate to each other once we do love each other is learning how to listen to each other. And that Lou has, but actually we worked backwards with it. We created our relationship and after people asked us, how did we do it? That we began to look and see, and it was really Lou being very much who he is, which is a very special human being.
Thank you.
And a very compassionate soul. That we discovered that it was possible to be like that. That it wasn't just that Lou was special, and although he is special, but that it was quality that could be recreated. And that has allowed us to be able to share with many, many men and women over the last 10, 20 years about how to listen to each other with compassion so that you can hear each other instead of hearing yourselves.
Yes. We are human beings. And as human beings, we are expectation. It comes natural with being human. When we want to raise our hand, is an expectation that our hand will be raised. We feel like sitting down, we can sit down. Pick up a glass of water, what an amazing gift God has given us to reach out, that this hand reaches out, it goes exactly where you want it, you don't even have to speak to this hand, and it picks up this glass of water, and you bring it to your lips, and you drink. A simple act, yet we take our simple acts for granted. We take being here in life for granted. We take breathing for granted. We are not in the presence of being here now and seeing the majesty, the magnificence of what we can do and what we are able to do. And as human beings, the only time we really get in touch with or become conscious of the gifts that we have been able to do naturally is when there is fear of loss or when there is loss. And when we are not able to do those things we have always been wanting to do and have been doing, then we are in a state of sadness and judgment of ourselves. Oh, how fortunate we were before this illness, this time in our lives, this crippling effect that we had. But in the presence of our life, we don't know how to live. We are expectation, you and I as human beings. We live in expectation. And when you live in expectation, what automatically follows the experience of expectation is disappointment. And so our lives are one of expectation and disappointment. Expectation and disappointment. And our marriages, our romances, our relationships. Oh, what a desire it is for us to be married, to have that wonderful idyllic relationship, the romantic relationship that Hollywood speaks of, that the films speak of, that the romantic novels speak of. Oh, that very, very, very wonderful, wonderful romantic relationship of being in love and finally being married. How unfortunate it is for us. And you and I know those experiences. And when we were married, and some of us even walking down the aisle were wondering what we were doing there at that time. And the first confrontation that we had, we realized, my God, we made an awful mistake. This is not exactly what we wanted. This is certainly not where we want to be. But we couldn't tell anybody. Everybody was showering us with congratulations. How wonderful it is. How happy you must be. What a wonderful day today. And inside, you're dying a thousand deaths. I just had an argument with my husband just now that I can't believe. I can't believe what he said to me. I can't believe how frightening I felt, how he frightened me by what he did. He's a completely different person than the one that I met even before. And here in just one moment, I'm suddenly faced with the fact, I don't know if I wish to be with this man. But there is no listening for us. Every around is telling, oh, how wonderful it is. What a wonderful wedding it was. What a wonderful life you have to look forward to. As human beings, we are expectation, especially in our relationships, especially in those relationships where we have become familiar with each other, where we feel we are safe. And I want to speak to the men who are here, and I want to thank you very much for being in my presence. I don't feel that it is an accident that I speak to you. I'm 74 years of age now. My next blessed year will be, I'll be 75. And I've learned a few things in my life. One of the things I've learned in my life that life is no accident. I can look back now in my life and I can see that everything in my life, every moment, every second, every disappointment, every terror in my life, every happy moment in my life, every change in my life had to happen exactly as it happened to bring me here now, in her presence, in her love for me. And you and I are here not by any accident. And so the men who are seated here and are in the presence of our relationship, it is no accident that you are here. So I want to speak to you and tell you how much I love you and how proud I am of you. And I know how difficult it is for you. You are kind men. You are not the men of my generation. You are kind men. You are the ages of my sons. You are kind men. Kind men. In my generation, there was very little listening for me. Even none of my friends whom I could call my close friends. How often did I wish to just even speak to one of them and say to them, how do you speak to a son who knows that you're a liar? How do you talk to a son who knows that you're a liar? My son knew that I was a liar. I was one way with him and one way with my friends, one way with my colleagues, but I was certainly not that way with my sons. That was not the way that I was with my wife. To everyone else, I had a very lovely, shining face. I was full of humor and so delicious and so wonderful to be with in such wonderful, wonderful company. But in the safest place of my life, where my wife loved me and my children loved me, in the safest place of my life, I was the most shameful and the most disagreeable person that I have ever known. I didn't know how to listen to my children. I didn't know how to listen to my wife. My whole game in life was to support, to provide. I knew nothing about being a father. I knew nothing about being a husband. I knew nothing about being a friend. Nothing at all. I'm a very fortunate man. My children have forgiven me. My first wife has forgiven me. We're the best of friends. And the greatness of it all is that I have been able to forgive myself. And for you men who are here, I know how harsh you are on yourselves. You and I do to ourselves in 10 seconds what no one can do to us in 20 years. We constantly judge ourselves and judge ourselves and judge ourselves and judge ourselves. We're at ourselves all the time. And even when we reach a point of acknowledgement, we can't even acknowledge that for ourselves. The thought that comes for us is, we should have been able to have done this a long time ago. How difficult it is for us to listen that we are loved. How difficult it is for us to let ourselves be loved. We have opinions about our parents, opinions about our children. We are always living in the past, all of us as human beings. It is time now for you and I to accept that reality that we live in the past and we have the power to be here now. And what Francine and I have learned and the life that we live, our purpose is to learn how to listen with compassion so that we can create a relationship as group, as family, as community, in which we will dissolve the obstacles we have to experiencing and trusting that we are loved. And what is listening with compassion? Listening with compassion is listening without a judgment, without an evaluation, without agreeing or disagreeing, without changing, without fixing, without wanting to help. It's listening. It's listening to that human being over there. We don't listen. We don't know how to listen. We want to. We can't even wait for that person to finish speaking because we have something to say. We don't know how to listen. We do not listen to each other. And as men especially, we do not know how to listen to the women who love us. We want to fix. We want to help. We want to change. We want to solve. We don't know how to listen. In a book written by Robert Johnson, such a wonderful, wonderful spiritual man, in his book called She, he tells a story of this young child awakening at night in a nightmare. And his parents come in to him to console him. And he tells them he's frightened because of this frightening thing, this object. Somebody came in and frightened him. And they hold him and they say, oh, don't worry, don't worry. There's nothing going on here. And they look under the crib and they look outside the door and they turn on the lights and they open the closets and they show him there's nobody here. Nobody here. Don't you worry about it.
Nothing to be afraid of.
Nothing to be afraid of. But for the child, this experience was real. Real. But this was not acknowledged by his parents. Don't worry. Everything is going to be all right. We want to take care of, because it's difficult for us to hear someone talk about their problems. It's difficult for us.
You know, in trying to console somebody, not to worry, not to be afraid, it comes from a very good place. We really mean very well. But what we don't do is we don't acknowledge they are afraid.
We don't honor this human being.
Instead, to be able to say, I'm so sorry this frightened you. I'm so sorry you were afraid. It will be all right. So it's not that we do anything intentionally. It's really unknowingly that we don't recognize how we don't listen because we don't honor another person's feelings.
True.
Why don't you define compassion?
Yes.
The way we've defined it anyway.
Listening with compassion is listening without a judgment, without an evaluation. And the beginning of listening with compassion is to notice how you're listening even to us. Notice that you might agree or disagree. Notice that you might not even understand what we're talking about. Or you might even accept what we're saying as a criticism of how you listen or be in the world. To listen without judgment and without evaluation, no one needs an education for that. Comes with the job.
With
that comes with being
evaluation.
Human. But to, what did you say?
In other words, to listen with judgment and evaluation, nobody needs any practice.
No, none whatsoever.
Very, We all know well how to do that.
None whatsoever. Our children learn it very quickly from us. But listening with compassion is listening over there. I grew up in a world where I had been taught and I had learned out of my own therapy and my willingness to want to look at why I was the way that I was. I was able to find out all the things that had happened to me in my life, and I thought that that would be it. If I could find out why I did these things, then I would be able to be an altered personality. I could correct myself. But no, that didn't happen for me. I just found out why I did these things, and I still kept doing the same things. What I have discovered for myself, and you have always known it as spiritual people, that this is one singular experience. This is one experience of a heavenly being. The Lord our God is one. This is a singular experience. We are all in this same experience, and your teacher is always in front of you. How many of you have meditated in your lives? May I see by a show of hands? God bless you. Then you know the amazing and most difficult experience to be able to be present to now, and this amazing experience of silence that comes to you, and it's not easy. Some of you have done it through martial arts. Some of you have done it through music. Some of you have done it through concentration on a candle or a light. Some of you have done it by reciting chants. So whatever it is, the purpose now is to become silent, a mind to fall asleep, a mind not to go on with the continuous round of tapes, the thoughts going on and on, but to be here now. And in that moment of now, when we reach that moment of now, you and I know we're home, we're safe. This is where we really live. This is where we really live. And now our desire is, how can we reach this place and be there all the time? I'm sorry. Meditation is meditation, but life is with people. We must learn how to be here with other human beings. There's a wonderful story of this great guru who sat on the mountaintop for 35 years. And then he felt that he was able now to come back to society, and came down from his mountaintop and went into the village and walked serenely through the village until someone jostled him, and he turned angrily to this person and suddenly realized this emotion of anger that had come up for him, and sadly and silently he turned his back on the village and walked back to the mountain. Life is with people. We will find ourselves here in that presence of the human being who stands in front of us. And in listening with compassion, there is a silence that takes place. You are no longer here. You are just in the presence of listening to this person. Because without a judgment.
The way we have defined compassion is a very, very deep appreciation of another human being's feelings and experience.
Thank you.
So it's more or less being able to listen to them and actually almost put yourself in their place. Not an easy thing to do. In the normal course of events, our attention is very much on ourselves, and we don't even notice it. How we listen to somebody is frequently, what is what they're saying mean to us? What is what they're saying gonna mean we're gonna have to do? What do we think about what they're saying? And all the attention tends to come back to us.
A man is driving an automobile, and suddenly he sees a car coming up behind him, horns honking and the lights turning on and off. And as this man approaches him in the car, he waves him over to get to the side of the curb. And so he pulls over, and this man pulls his car over to the side, and he runs over to this driver whom he stopped, and he said to him, excuse me, sir, The woman who's sitting next to you, is she your wife? He said, yes. He says, don't you know that she fell out of the car 2 miles back? The guy says, oh, thank God. He says, how can you say such a thing? Thank God. He says, I thought I was going deaf. That is typical of how we listen. We listen for ourselves. We don't listen for another human being in front of us. We don't know how to listen. We don't know how to listen. We don't know how to feel what they feel. And yet, God has given each of you that ability. That ability. When you are with a child and you hold this child in your arms and this child is afraid and you just hold this child in your arms, you are there with this child now. And this child is so at peace, so comforted, so held in his arms. We can do that with each other. And women, God bless you, I'm very sorry that we don't know how to listen to you. We want to help you, we want to fix, we want to change. We don't know how to listen to you. And all that woman has ever asked for us is to be listened to. All we've ever wanted to do is to be listened to. Then we will be safe when we are listened to. And it's when you are listened to, then you have an avenue in which to speak who you are and be who you are and make your own mistakes and finally reach a point where you can self-correct and self-generate it. But when we are at the effect of people interrupting us and not listening to us, we are ill at ease. We are not present. And we are at the effect of our own fears. And we can't even, just even state our fears. Somebody will say, don't worry, it's nothing at all. So, nothing at all. No. Woman, God bless her, she is more capable than us, my friends. She is the one who creates life. When we create a place that is safe for her, and she stands in her safety, in her glory, in her grace, then we will have a world that works for everyone. We are all afraid. Men are afraid. Women are more afraid. Children are most afraid. But as men, we are denied the opportunity, you and I, in growing up as men, to even declare that we are afraid. It's demanded upon us that we be a man, be a man, be a man, be a man, whatever that means, be a man. It is easier for women to show their emotions. They're expected to be emotional, but not you and I. And yet we live in fear. Francine reminded me of a story about when I said I make up things and how I think about things and I go on imagining things. I remember.
Because actually, you know, in relationship, one of the most causes of upsets is not what happens between two people, but what we make up it means what happens between two people. So Lou has a few examples for you.
It's wonderful telling about my foolish self. We were at a Safeway store in San Francisco where we live, Marcy, our daughter, and Francine, and myself. And I had gone out earlier, and I was on my way out, and there were some Girl Scouts and their mothers, and they were selling Girl Scout cookies. Well, I love Girl Scout cookies. So I went over to the children and their mothers who were at the tables, and I said to one of the little girls, and I said, what is the new cookie that you have this year for us? The little girl said, we have oatmeal cookies. I said, oh, wonderful oatmeal cookies. Let me have a box of the oatmeal cookies. How much are they? She said, $2.50. I said, $2.50? Why, last year was only $1. She said, I know, and the year before that, it was only 50 cents. I said, yes, and the parents and I, we just looked at each other. Times are getting, so everything is going up. I said, well, let me have a box of the oatmeal cookies. And as I'm paying for the oatmeal cookies, Francine comes up behind me and says, don't buy the oatmeal cookies. Buy the chocolate mint cookies instead. And I stopped in my action. My first reaction, boy, these people must think I'm henpecked. And my first desire was to turn around and to smack Francine right in the head with this box of oatmeal cookies. I could see myself beating her to the ground, ripping her arms out of her head and beating her up. But instead, I very silently put my hand into my pocket, took out another $2.50, and purchased a box of chocolate and cookies. And now I'm walking to the car with Francine and Marcy, chocolate and cookies in one hand, oatmeal cookies in the other hand, and I'm a killer. And my conversation is, why does she always do this to me? Why is she always embarrassing me? How terribly embarrassed and how foolish I looked. How terrible it was. And she's always doing this to me. Why does she do this to me? Why does she do this to me? And suddenly I said to myself, friend Louis, what did Francine do to you? I said, well, look what she did. She said, don't buy the chocolate, the oatmeal cookies, buy the chocolate. Oh. And say, you foolish person, you look what you're doing. She said, she didn't say anything like that at all. And in just one second, I had been transformed from this very happy-go-lucky fellow into this one who wanted to murder my wife.
I'm sure that's never happened to anyone else in here.
We listen, we think we hear, and we are convinced. And we will go to our dying day convinced of the stories that we have carried with us about our mothers and our fathers and our husbands and our wives, about what they said to us and what they didn't say to us. And the story is only your story. You have completely forgotten what was said to you. What you live with is your past. You are at the effect of the stories that you have constantly been repeating to yourself and convincing yourself that this is exactly what happened to you. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It's being here today that matters. It's seeing constantly that you are safe that matters. And it's out of your correction of me and out of your willingness to forgive me that I have been able to now come to a point where I can correct myself and forgive myself. And I thank you very, very much. I want you to know it's not easy when you're correcting me to sit and listen to you.
I understand.
Not at all. I have to sit there and saying, she loves me, she loves me, she loves me, to quell this beast within me that just keeps shouting, why did she say, throw the chair at her, do something like that, or something like that, or act badly to her, or walk out of the house. How many of you walk away in arguments? How many of you suddenly close down in confrontations? And when we close down in confrontations, what happens to us, we are still embedded in our own thoughts, but we have no responsibility and no consciousness of what our action has meant to this human being who is with us. We need to become conscious. We need to become responsible for how our actions and our withdrawals affect this human being who lives with us, who is in our lives. It is the greatest gift that you can not only give yourself, but for the people who live with you.
And the most difficult, because when we are upset, we really don't care about the other person. Our attention is all over here, and if they're upset, good. They deserve it. Because we're upset, and we're not, and that's the last time that we ever have compassion for them. Our attention is all over here on us, and the experience is, why are we upset? They did it to us. So it really takes a great deal of consciousness to get outside of that conversation that we get ourselves into, that we start building evidence and getting very right about, to be able to look over there and have some compassion for this other person who is either right now at the effect of our upset or who may even have caused it, and still to be able to have compassion for whatever that was that had them get upset to begin with.
And this is the pathway that I have found has given me the opportunity to have compassion for myself. I don't want people to judge me, yet I judge myself. I don't want people to evaluate me, and yet I evaluate myself. I don't want people to fix me, to think that I am less than able to do something, and yet I think that I am less than able. I want to be loved, and yet I do not love myself. I want to be respected, and yet I do not respect myself. I want to be honored, and yet I do not honor myself. I want to be listened to, and yet I do not listen to myself. Your relationship with yourself is the bottom line, is the origin of your relationship with every human being out here. And the amazing thing about compassion, just like forgiveness has to be created. Just like compassion has to be created. But you are creator. That's who you are, and you have forgotten. We live here as human beings, dwelling in the past, at the effect of the past, and we can't create. We can't generate. We can't generate. We're still holding on to those patterns of years ago. How many of us have still not forgiven our parents, and they dwell with us every single minute of our lives? In listening with compassion, when compassion is present, then you become the beneficiary of having compassion for yourself. And when you have compassion for yourself, then you will be in the presence of your love and forgiveness for yourself. And this is what we have always wanted. We all know this, that when you forgive yourself, you can forgive others, we say. And when you love yourself, you have to love yourself first. You have to forgive you. That's true. You have to love yourself first. But how does love come here when we are at ourselves all the time? We can practice and create love and forgiveness and compassion out here. That's why Buddha has said, the teacher is always in front of you. Your teacher is in front of you. When people do things that reactivate you, or make you feel horrible, they're only bringing up the same things that you don't like about yourself. Every person who stands before you, who reactivates you, is a teacher of yours, to bring you to a certain level of consciousness, to see how you can self-correct and self-generate, but to have compassion for yourself and see yourself as I see myself now. And I am reactivated all the time. I'm a human being just like you. But I don't deny my feelings anymore. I don't deny what has happened to me anymore. I don't hide my feelings anymore, especially not from myself. I am so conscious of my feelings now, and so conscious of the things that I do and how it affects another human being. To take myself away, to turn away in a mode of anger, and to leave the house, how irresponsible it is. We walk away and we leave this person who loves us completely at our mercy. This poor human being who now has no recourse except to blame themselves for what they did to us. And we have no idea about what we have done over there. All we have done is we have taken ourselves away. We need to become conscious. We need to be present that we live amongst human beings and we don't know how to live amongst human beings. We need to be conscious of seeing what we have done and what we do every single day in our lives to the people who love us the most. We need to be able to be here listening with compassion to ourselves, listening with forgiveness. Oh, to practice forgiveness out there is an amazing gift of freedom. Those people whom you are hanging on to, whom you haven't forgiven, do those people, are these people aware that you go around every day thinking the thoughts that you have? They don't think about the thoughts that you have. Those people are thinking about the thoughts that they have. You think that people think about you? No. People don't think about you. They think about themselves. A good beginning to become sane is, first of all, to acknowledge I am insane. I am insane. I am insane. The conversations I go on in my head, I would be ashamed to let people know what I think about. I'm horrified and ashamed at the thoughts that I've had about people. Well, everybody has those thoughts too. We can't control our thoughts, but we can be responsible for the meanings we give to our thoughts. Out of my relationship with Francine, I can be here now. And I can always see when something happens, I'm conscious to see the effect that it has upon her. And so I'm able to say, I'm sorry for the way I just acted. Please forgive me. It was so hurtful.
That's one of the other things is we find apology is an extraordinarily important piece in relatedness. And I just don't mean in a husband-wife relationship. I'm talking about in all relationships that we have, that the power of apology is extraordinary. And it's a gift that we have and that we don't always use. Many of us misunderstand that to apologize does not mean to admit guilt.
Thank you.
We have collapsed those two things. And so if we do feel that we have done something that we are wrong for, then we may be willing to say that we're sorry. But we've actually learned that to apologize is an expression of compassion, and that I can do that with Lou, and I can do that with anybody in front of me that is upset, whether I had anything to do with their getting upset or not, just to be able to tell them how sorry I am that they are upset.
Thank you.
How sorry I am that they are in pain. How sorry I am that for whatever is going on for them. And it doesn't include my having taken any responsibility for having caused it. Now, I may have caused it, and then my apology would be fuller. I'm sorry for whatever I've done. But it's possible to apologize even when you haven't done anything. But it is an expression of compassion, of recognition that the other person with you is in pain of some sort. Now, here's the tricky part. When it comes to an emotional relationship like this, I mean, frequently, when Lou's upset, it's my fault. Matter of fact, it's more than frequently.
Always her fault.
When Lou's upset, it's always my fault.
I wasn't upset until she said what she said.
You know, so it now...
must be her fault.
And there are times when it's something I've done or I've not done or I should have done or I shouldn't have done, but it has frequently got nothing to do with me. And so, but I know that as far as he's concerned, I did it. As far as he's concerned, it's me.
Absolutely.
And so I've even been able to go as far as to apologize for whatever it is that he's unjustly accusing me of, so that when he is no longer upset, then we can talk about what actually happened. But I have learned to try and have a conversation and sort out who's right and who's wrong inside of somebody who's already upset.
When you are in the presence of insanity, don't try to explain or defend. It only feeds the fire, and they become worse than ever.
So that is what I definitely have learned, not to try to interact or discuss or explain.
As men, we are insane, you know, but when we're upset, we're killer insane.
And the difficulty with this is, for us as women, when we feel accused, justly or unjustly, our automatic response is to explain, justify, and defend. And we actually do feel that if we could just get them to understand, then they would no longer be upset. The interesting thing about it, as logical as that sounds, that makes them more crazy, more upset. See, they don't respond that way. If they think they've been accused, which you may notice, you may say something that has nothing to do with anything, like as Lou said in the beginning, where's the paper? You know, some simple question. And they will suddenly explode into some sort of an attack. And you don't even understand where all of that came from. Because if they think they're being accused...
And we stand accused as men. We listen accused.
So many things you hear, you think you're being accused. Frequently, your response will be to attack. And ours is to defend. And since our defending makes you more incensed, it immediately can set off an instant upset for people. And especially since it has nothing to do, it can have nothing to do with what you say, but it can be.
But the danger is, the danger for you as woman is that you begin to blame yourself.
Yes.
You blame yourself for what happened over there. And as you blame yourself, you destroy yourself because it has not been your fault at all.
Especially when you try to figure out.
You are not to blame. This is just the way we are as men. You are not to blame. Woman is not to blame. And children take blame upon themselves so quickly. Hmm. I met a young girl who is about 7 or 8 years of age. I met her with her father. And her father told us in her presence that he and his wife were being divorced now. And I said, I was so sorry to hear that. I said, and has it been a civil kind of discussion that's been going on? Has it been angry? He says, it's been a lot of anger. And I said, I'm sorry. And I turned to this young girl and I said to her, you are not to blame, my sweetheart. You are not to blame. And she looked at me and tears came to her. I said, you are not to blame. You are not to blame. You are not to blame. I said, when I was divorced with my first wife and it was such a painful experience for me, later on I spoke to my children and my children thought that they were to blame for this. No, 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 children are not to blame. Your mother and father love each other. They just didn't know how to live together. But you are not to blame. But you can be my partner, I said to her. When mommy talks to you about daddy and she says something about daddy that upsets you, you say to her, mommy, don't say that about daddy. I love him very much, and when you say that about daddy, it hurts me. And when your daddy speaks to you about your mother, and he says something to you about your mother that also is upsetting to you, you say to him, daddy, don't you say this about mommy. I love mommy very much, and when you speak that way, it hurts me. That's all you have to say to them. And if you are my partner, they can become friends. Will you be my partner? Will you be my partner? And she leaped into my arms and she said, I am your partner. I am your partner. We all have our responsibilities of taking care of children, in that we are not even aware what happens to our children at home. There is an African proverb, when the elephants fight, the ants die. And how many parents keep from arguing in front of their children, and the children are still at the effect of it because they don't have to argue. Suddenly there is a schism. Suddenly there is a separation between these two human beings who walk as strangers at home, and the children are affected by it. You and I, to be a responsible society, and I have yet to find the responsible time in my society, in my 75 years of life, that the society will come from the point of view of being responsible for the next generation. It's our children who should be thought of. Our children who should be our consciousness. Our children must be safe. We must stand for humanity. We must stand for the children. It is a sin that children die of starvation. It is a sin that children are molested and frightened and raped and assaulted and killed. It is a sin against life. And we can do this at home.
Yes, we must start at home.
We must be aware of how our actions affect others. We cannot deny our emotions any longer. We cannot deny our feelings any longer. We are feeling creatures. I read something by this woman, this wonderfully wonderful woman. She's an abbé of a Buddhist monastery in Australia, and she had been elevated as the abbey of the monastery by the Buddhist monks. Pema Chodron is her name, and in her writing she writes the following: if your everyday practice is to open to all your emotions, to all the people you meet, to all the situations you encounter, without closing down, trusting that you can do that, then that will take you as far as you can go. And then you will understand all the teachings that anyone has ever taught. Up in my home of immigrant parents, kind parents, my father was an angel, my mother was a saint. But there was an unwritten law that I learned immediately. Don't tell anybody what happens at home. Don't tell anybody about what happens at home. Later on in life, I asked my friends, and nobody had told them, but the same unwritten law was there for them. Don't tell anybody what happens at home. And so we have lived with each other, afraid to be intimate, afraid to share ourselves to each other, afraid to be with each other, not knowing that every human being is afraid. Every human being has lived in denial. Every human being has been at the effect of unexpressed and denied emotions. It is no longer appropriate for us to live this way. And so I am my emotions, I am my feelings.
And you express them?
And I express them. And Francine does not make up any stories about them, how bad I am or what kind of a person I am. She can be with me expressing my feeling because I live in the experience of trusting that I am loved. I listen that I am loved. And I will always be reactivated. I am a human being. I will always want things the way I want them to be. I will always expect things the way I expect them to be. I will always be disappointed out of my expectations. And there will be anger and resentment and fear and sadness and all of my emotions. I am an emotional being.
Why don't you tell them the story about how you got around one of your reactions, the time with the bumblebee tuna fish?
Oh, thank you very much, Francine. I had come home one night. I had been speaking on the road, and I must have been gone about a month and a half. And I was so lonely, and I was just longing for Francine's company and her physical closeness. And when I came home, it was about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I silently took my clothes off, got all my stuff on the side, and crept into bed and reached over to her and put my arms around her. So wanting to do this all this time, and Francine hit me with her elbow and said, "I'm sleeping." I jumped out of bed. I threw the bed covers aside. I said, "Damn it. I've been gone this month and a half. All I wanted to do was put my arms around you and kiss you, and this is how you greet me?" And I stormed out of the bedroom, and I walked into the kitchen, and I sat down naked on this caned chair, which wasn't comfortable for me at all. I immediately proceeded to go to the refrigerator, took out a can of beer, and I popped it open. I was sitting there and watching the television, drinking my beer, and suddenly I said, "What the hell are you doing here? What the hell are you doing here? You're supposed to be in there. What are you doing here?" "Well, she didn't want you." "She didn't say she didn't want you. She didn't say she didn't want me." "No, she said, 'I'm sleeping.'" "Oh," I said, "oh, excuse me." I immediately went and I took out a wonderful bedside tray and I made some fresh coffee, decaf hazelnut coffee. And I put a little rose in a vase. And then I proceeded to make her a delicious tuna fish sandwich on 7-grain whole wheat dry bread and bumblebee tuna, solid tuna. Don't use the other kind. And mayonnaise. Hellman's mayonnaise is special, very Jewish, Hellman's mayonnaise. With the tuna and so, and it was delicious. And it was a napkin, there was a linen napkin, and I brought it into her and the aroma of the coffee, and I bring it all into Francine, and I turned on the light in the hallway, in the corridor, and I said, "Francine, Francine." And she says, "Boy, that smells good." I said, "Francine." She says, "Is that fresh coffee?" I said, "Yes, Francine." And, "Oh, look." I said, "Get up, get up, get up, Francine." Oh, she says, "Oh, Louis, this is wonderful." And we had a party.
He knew what would get me off of being sleeping would be food.
Oh, what we do to the people who love us. How we are at the effect of our thoughts and our minds, and how it drives us into a deeper sense of insanity and takes us away from each other and separates us from the fact that we are loved. We can't remember what was said. We only can remember, and we think we remember what was said, but what we said, I tell you, and what you remember is your reaction, my friends. You don't remember what was said. You gave a distinction to what was said, and now you believe that was said, and you will go to the death swearing that that was said. No. You are your reactions. So I apologize to you.
Thank you. That was fine.
I apologize to you.
See, it's really out of trusting that you are loved, out of being able to listen that you are loved, that you can hear things that sound hurtful, that sound like rejection, that you want to take in all those different ways, but you can remember that you are loved and they wouldn't have meant that. But if we forget that we are loved and we don't trust that we are loved, then we go start down that path, and the conversation ensues, and it builds, and it builds, and it builds, and we get to a place where we have made a mountain out of a molehill, out of something that wasn't meant as anything, that we felt slightly rejected. Now we're completely convinced, we are certain of it, we've got lots of evidence, and now we are really furious. And, you know, and we've all done that. And it seems so real. That's the difficult part, is it seems so real, but the source of it begins with, do we trust that we are loved? Because if we trust that we are loved, then we can stop and relook at what was said. Was it really what we thought? Did it really mean what we thought? It's in those cases that Lou's been able to see, no, she just said, I'm sleeping. It didn't come with all of the baggage and rejection and disappointment and upset that was his initial reaction to it.
If you learn just to listen to your mothers, God bless you for those of you whose parents are still alive. If you listen to your mothers, you will find a way through for yourself in life. Because when mama talks to you and you think it's criticism and always nagging at you and wanting you to change and why did you do this and you shouldn't have done that, if you could just absolutely say to mama, thank you for loving me. Thank you for loving me. That's what we forgot in our lives. We made a decision that the way they spoke and the way they acted, there wasn't any experience of love that was present anymore for us. No, you have always been loved. And people do what they do. But we made a distinction. If they loved us, they wouldn't act the way... No. People act the way they do, and they love you. Mama always loved you. Mama will always love you. And your dad, who didn't even know how to speak to his son, didn't know how to speak to a daughter, he loved you. And he says things and does things that rankle you, that upset you, that distress you. And if you can just even begin in listening to them now, listening to your wives, listening to your spouses, listening to each other, and realize and be able to realize and catch yourself, because we're noticing it now. Your presence here denotes that you are committed to having relationships work in the world, that you yourself are committed to trusting that you are loved. Otherwise, you and I wouldn't be here in this experience at this moment. You are committed to having relationships work, yours and the entire world working, to say, thank you for loving me. What a gift. What an amazing experience. You return to yourself rather than being at the effect of your thoughts. And you can do this for yourself. You are the source of who you are. You are the one who generates who you are. We've been blaming everybody else for it. No, it's time for you and I to grow up, to be here in the presence that we have always been loved, that we are human beings. Every human being behaves like this. To have compassion for yourself, for those of you who are separated from your wives, from those of you who are separated from your husband. Thank you, Ginny. God bless you. Mama would say, on the truth. On the truth. Sneezing. God bless you. God is present. On the truth. On the truth. When you will be able to just listen that you are loved, you have always been loved. But your thoughts in here have brought you to a point of such separation from each other, such alienation from each other, that now we live separately and not as partners. Not as partners. Not as partners. There was a story I read in the Reader's Digest of this mother who was in a department store, in a large store, and she was purchasing a toy, a doll for her daughter. And so this person is telling the story, and so she came to the section, and the little girl said, and what does this dolly do, Mommy? And what does this dolly do, Mommy? And what does this dolly do, Mommy? And so Mommy said, well, this dolly cries, this dolly wets, this dolly says, Mama, and this dolly laughs, and so. And she saw that this mother was trying to steer this kid away from these dolls that were very, very expensive, and brought her over to another section of dolls. And the little girl said to her mother, and she said, and what does this dolly do? And the mother said, this dolly listens. And the child eagerly reached for the doll. Oh, do we crave to be heard? Oh, do we crave to be listened to? Then we are honored. Then we are safe. And then we are known. We are present. But women have not been listened to. Not been listened to. And that's where we can begin. Begin with Mama. If your blessed mother is still alive, listen to her. Listen to her love for you. Listen to her chiding of you. Are you still wearing that tie? Thank you for loving me, Mama. Oh, when are you going to grow up? Thank you so much for loving me, Mama. And not the other thoughts that you have about Mama and about Dad, and have compassion for Dad. He knew less. He had to hide his emotions. He couldn't even say, I love you. He couldn't even say, please love me. Have compassion for each other. When you'll have compassion for each other, you'll have compassion for yourself. And when you will begin to have compassion for yourself, then you will be safe with yourself, with this person who lives with you. There has never been a being like you in this universe. There has never been one just like you. For those of you who are above the age of 25 to 50, it has taken over 5 million people in these last 20, 30 generations to produce you. And for those of you who are of my age, older than 50 and 60 and 70, it has taken over 10 million people in this universe of all of these generations to produce you. You represent millions and millions of living and dead souls who are immortalized in your presence. It's time that we honor those human beings who came before us and brought us to this point in our lifetime. It is no longer appropriate for us to be at the effect of the thoughts in our head to such an extent that it robs us of the greatness of the grace of God, that we are here, we are alive, we have learned to survive, now we must learn to live together as family, as community, as nation, as planet, so that we can be here separate, but one family. All the colors of the flowers, that's how God has painted us. All of the colors, we are the gods, all of the children of God. We are human beings. We laugh, we cry, we are afraid. We are agonized. We are afraid to be alone. It's time for us to reach a new point in our lives, to accept ourselves, to trust that we are loved. I want to read something to you written by an Italian philosopher, religious writer, Romano Guardini. Listen to this amazing, wonderful man. But there is such a thing as genuine love, which is always considerate. Its distinguishing characteristic is, in fact, regard for personal dignity. Its effect is to stimulate self-respect in the other person. Its concern is to help the loved one to become their true self. It seeks them for their own sake. In a mysterious way, such love finds its purest realization in its power to stimulate the other to attain their highest self-realization. Thus, its effect is to draw the other out into freedom. And if the loved one were called upon to give an account of what that loved one had meant to them, they would say, I owe everything to it. Most of all, the fact that through it alone have I become my real self. A marvelous paradox, truly life's ultimate mystery. I know that you want to serve. I know that you wish to make a difference in the world. And I know that you all have goals and things that you wish to do. And I want to share with you that for you to empower every single human being around you is to just let yourself be loved. When you let us love you, when we know that you let us love you, we are safe with you. We don't have to be anybody else except ourselves. When you just let us love you, and you have the power to do that now. And if our purpose is spiritual beings and we strive to be here now, then let's be here now in the spirit of who we really are. And who we really are is love, compassion, and forgiveness. We are not our stories. We are not our histories. We are not just this body of bag and bones. We are human beings. We are beings who are human. And we must comport ourselves and conduct ourselves with the greatest of honor, because we have been given this glorious gift of being alive, to be loved, to let yourself be loved. Just started to think about time.
I want to give you an opportunity, if you have any questions that
so
you would
I want
like
to thank
ask.
You, first of all, for allowing Francine and I to speak with you, and now we would like for you and us to engage in a dialogue with you for a while. So we want to thank you again for listening to us. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
I've heard you both talk about how it's possible to recover in a way that I hadn't heard it before, and I'd like to hear it again.
Thank you.
Well, what Vivian's talking about is, you know, if for anybody that expects that relationship of any sort can be without upset, is definitely an expectation that is a setup for disappointment. Because all relationship will have upset in it. As we described tonight, just what our mind does with what the other person says is a source of upset. We get upset, it's inevitable. So to determine whether a relationship is working is not based on that you hardly have any upsets. It's human to have upsets. It's natural to have upsets. It's part of relationship to have upsets. I'm not just talking about a marital relationship. I'm talking about it's fairly natural in all relationships. If we're really open with each other, if we're really honest with each other, if we're really willing to be straight with each other, somewhere in there's bound to be some upset. The quality of relationship, as far as we are concerned, is measured on our ability to recover, because there will be upset. Now, how long do we stay upset? What kind of damage is it due to the relationship? That's really the question. Are we going to stay mad at each other, not talk to each other, build up a conversation in our head where we get more and more and more and more right about what goes on? Or are we committed to the quality of the relationship, where the most important thing is recovering the harmony?
We must create partnership in life.
And as far as we're concerned, it's really important to be committed to recovering that harmony. And each relationship needs to find its own way back to doing that. I mean, as we've talked about, apology is a big help in that direction. But there are lots of different ways to learn to recover. As you know, as Lou described, being able to stop and look and see what actually happened. What really started this? What did I think all of that was about? Was it really all about that? There's lots of different ways to get us out of and through being upset. The important thing is that we recover. It actually gains strength in relationship to know that you can get upset, you can be upset with each other, and that you can get through it, and that it's not going to damage the relationship in any real way. Especially when you are really deeply committed to each other, then you can trust that nobody's going anywhere. And all the energy can be put on just recovering from the upset. Frequently, when we're not sure enough about a relationship, as soon as there's an upset, it calls the whole relationship into question. We start a conversation called, well, do I really want to be in this relationship? Is this really the right relationship for me? I mean, is this really working? And we spend a lot of time and attention on that conversation. And until we resolve that conversation, we don't get to the one about recovering. So once you commit in your relationship, that creates a foundation that allows you to go directly to work on recovering.
And the most important relationship that you have is your relationship with yourself. But we have not been responsible but our relationship with ourselves, because we want this person in front of us to be different in the way that they are, then our lives would be much easier. We have no power over there. We have no power over there with another human being. The power is over here. Is over here. Our power is over here. If you want someone in your relationship to be kind to you, be kind to them. If you want them to listen to you, listen to them. Give yourself a gift. Because when you are kind to that person, you will bring kindness into your life and you will be the beneficiary of that kindness that you've created. If you listen to them, you'll learn how to listen to them and you will begin to listen to yourself. When you forgive them, that gift returns to you. It is your relationship with yourself that I need to bring you to, for you to see the goodness and grace that God gave to you. You yourself have that power to bring this peace of life and love to yourself. And we have wanted everybody around us to be different in the way that they are, then we would be happy and our lives would be happier.
Thank you for asking the question.
Thank you very much, Vivian.
It sounds like you have a framework for dealing with conflict in your relationship.
Yes.
My question is, have you ever had experiences of conflict that haven't been able to be resolved within that framework? And have you had to extend outside of the existing framework to deal with that new conflict?
Yes, thank you for asking that. Given that the basis of our framework is listening, there are times when we cannot hear each other. And I think that that happens in absolutely every relationship. Now, we have been willing to use our friends. And we encourage people to do this.
You can't do this alone.
That this is the one area people in relationship keep it very private. And what goes on at home and what they deal with, they don't usually like to talk about. So we all
have ashamed.
Friends. And we all socialize with friends, but frequently we don't talk about what we're up against and what we're struggling with. We do. We actually, if I find that there's something that I'm trying to, that I'm upset about with Lou, and I'm trying to get him to understand and he can't seem to do that, I will shelve it, so to speak, for the time being, until I'm in the presence of some of my friends that I can trust, that if I bring up the conversation, that I can have it with Lou, even if Lou continues to not be able to hear me, first of all, I'll get heard. I know that these other people with me, they will hear me. They're not emotionally involved. This is not quite about them. They will be able to hear me. And that will make a big difference.
And in the presence also of my presence and the presence of Francine being heard, I can hear her now too. This business of relationship is the most difficult of all. This confrontation of being in relationship takes such great heroism, because it's there that you will find yourselves in an emotional relationship. There you will find yourself. But we are human beings.
Once we find that we can hear, then that becomes the beginning of us being able to recover for ourselves and to continue to be able to speak about it and resolve it in whatever way is necessary. But for us, it begins with being able to hear, and sometimes on our own, we can't.
Excuse me, but what is your name?
My name is David.
David.
David, what a wonderful name, David. David, thank you very much for the question. We are enlightened people. We are spiritual people. And so when we find a piece of information, ha-ha, that's it. Now we've got it made. No. I get upset all the time. I'm a human being. But there's a difference with my upset and somebody else's upset. Or my upset at Francine. I never give it any meaning about my relationship. I never have a conversation that this relationship doesn't work. This relationship was a mistake. I don't have thoughts like that anymore, and sometimes they come up. But I used to, everything I gave meaning to, I added on to it. I had a conversation about it. And then I finally convinced myself that I was right. And as a mind, what you and I are is to be right. 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 Dead right. And we forget, you and I, that as soon as we make a decision about something, that that decision now is creating our future, especially about this human being in front of us. As soon as we make a decision about this person who is untrustworthy, who doesn't know how to speak to us, as soon as we make that decision, that person will show up in our listening, and we will not be present to the fact that we have helped to create our own judgment of this human being who now doesn't stand a chance with us. Everything comes up for us every day in relationship, just like it comes up for you. But we recover. We recover. We recover. And more quickly and more quickly and more quickly, almost instantaneous. And there is no shift for us in our relationship with each other. It doesn't mean anything. It has no meaning for us. It's in the meaning that I used to die in my relationship. Everything had such meaning for me. And I would always be the one that I would pick on and always beat myself up about it. If I beat myself up anymore, it doesn't work not only for me, but it affects her. So now I'm consciously present to how she feels. What a gift to be constantly present to how she feels. We need to create partnership in relationship.
And partnership among your friends. To support them in their relationships and to have them support
you. David, life is with people.
So we highly encourage people to find other people that they can feel safe enough with to share the most intimate parts of their relationship.
Can't do this alone.
Thank you for asking.
Thank you, David, giving us an opportunity to speak to that. Thank you. Thank you. Francine and I want to thank you very, very much for giving us an opportunity to share our lives with you. Thank you for including us in your lives, and thank you for being in our lives. We love you. We look forward to our happiness with you, and we wish you the best in life, and we wish you the best of you. Take good care of yourselves. God bless us all. Good night, everybody.
Good night.